Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and we start the day with reparations. Fresh off our conversation yesterday about Martin Luther King Jr.'s legacy, speaking truth to power, we consider the move by the Boston City Council to create a panel that will make specific recommendations to the city on reparations. The council voted unanimously in December to form a task force. Mayor Michelle Wu supports it, but it is a sticky subject. In April 2021, UMass Amherst and WCVB Channel 5 conducted a national poll and found that nearly half of those asked definitely didn't believe descendants of those enslaved in the U.S. should receive payments. So what would it take to move the needle on reparations, and where are we in the process right now here in Boston? Here to help us dig in on that, president of the Boston chapter of the NAACP, Tanisha Sullivan. Tanisha, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you. Good to be with you, Tiziana.
And Tanisha, as I understand it, by ordinance, the NAACP will have a, you name it, a role, a slot, a place on this panel. Is that correct?
Well, no, we do not have, we specifically did not design this task force to have designated seats. Mayor Wu will appoint at least five people to the task force, which will ultimately steer the work. Certainly, given that the NAACP Boston branch worked with our city council starting in 2020 to bring forward this work, we certainly will be making some recommendations about folks who we believe, experts who we believe would be well-suited to serve, though.
So this isn't the first time that the concept of reparations have come up with the city council, Tanisha, but it does feel like this task force is a pretty significant new step. So A, does it feel like that to you? Are we in a different moment? And do you feel like what we do have about design, structure, et cetera, is the right way to approach the task?
This is a major step forward. I certainly want to give acknowledgement to former, the late state Senator Bill Owens for really introducing the conversation around reparations to us here in Massachusetts, really back in the 80s. It has been a long road to get to this point, but it is certainly the establishment of this task force is a giant step forward. Here in Boston, what we've been very intentional about is ensuring that our process as it relates to this work is intentional about all of Boston having the opportunity to better understand the history of enslavement in this country, and also what happened here in Boston. You know, from certainly chattel slavery or the ownership of slaves, to the policies and practices here in the city of Boston, to quite frankly, how slavery was empowered through financing. It is our hope that as a city, we'll be able to learn together about that history, quite frankly, before we even get into a conversation about what reparations or repair may or may not look like.
So a couple places I want to go with that, Tanisha, and I'm glad you brought up this idea of history and what happened here in Boston. There are more than reparations in this scope of work. Reconciliation is an important concept as well. And I found myself thinking about this because it seems like the racial reconciliation needs here are, I wouldn't say actually much more recent, but also recent. I'm thinking, for example, of busing in the 1970s. We still see tension over Boston public schools and access to opportunity today. So how to situate work that looks at the legacy of slavery, what happened then, but mm-hmm. in the context of racial harms that are recent in our Boston history?
That's right. I mean, and this is an important piece. You know, so often in the conversation about reparations, people go immediately to the end of the story, or, you know, the question about, well, you know, what's the dollar figure that can compensate for this harm? Quite frankly, there is no dollar figure that can compensate for the harm that is caused, that was caused, that is caused by the enslavement of people. But that's not where we begin. And from an NAACP standpoint, we have been very intentional about trying to resist or helping our communities resist going to that point first. We really believe it's important for us to start with the history. Let's learn this together. You know, there are a lot of stories out there, there are myths out there, and then there's fact out there. Let's start together learning about what happened here in Boston, in the greater Boston area, relative to chattel slavery? What was, in fact, our role, both the good and the bad? Because we know this is a city where there was strong, where there was a strong abolitionist movement. So we want to lift that up too. But what specifically was our role? And then let's talk about what we've done over the past few decades to help address the harms, the impact of enslavement. Let's talk about what we've done here in the city of Boston to help address the impact of systemic racism. And then let's talk about the work that still needs to be done.
So
that's get to the conversation about reparations.
So a lot of richness there. One thread I'll pick up on, and we're speaking with Tanisha Sullivan, who's the president of the Boston chapter of the NAACP, about the move by the city of Boston, the Boston City Council, to put together a task force to consider and make recommendations about reconciliation and reparations for the city. You made a reference to the greater Boston area and our history, mm-hmm. Tanisha, also on my mind, because we have, for example, port cities and towns. You have the history of Salem. You have the history of New Bedford. But this is authorized and powered by the Boston City Council. And how does it work when one city, with certainly, as you've just noted, a lot of its own history, moves forward in a context that really is, Tanisha, in terms of systemic racism, as well as our collective history around slavery and abolition, regional in its nature?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think it's, again, I think it's important for us to have this conversation in a historical context, because what we know today as Boston was not, you know, the boundaries of Boston was not, you know, we're not the boundaries of Boston 200 years ago. And so having an understanding that the city, the geography of the city we know today was not the geography of the city that was. But the other piece of this, Tiziana, I think is to really focus, for us to really focus on this as an opportunity for, again, shared learning and understanding. I know that there is a national debate going on this issue. I also am well aware that this can be a polarizing issue, right? But I'm also a deep believer that here in Boston, we have the capacity to do this work and to do it in a way that really does help more of us better understand our collective history. And I am very committed to helping ensure that as best as we possibly can, this is a process that, although will likely be painful and hard, is one that in the end can help bring us just a little bit closer together so that we can really do the work of inclusion, so that we can really do the work necessary to ensure that all people within the city of Boston have the opportunity to benefit from all that the city has to offer.
So let's stay with the city for a minute. Tanisha, we talk with Boston Mayor Michelle Wu every month, and last month, her December appearance with us happened to be after the vote by the Boston City Council, which was a unanimous vote. I asked her at the time, you know, was she going to support the ordinance? She said she did. And she said to us, I'm going to play a little sound for you here in a second, that she thought Boston, kind of as a foundational city of the nation, actually had a unique responsibility to lead on the issue, especially with the city's 400th anniversary in sight in 2030 and the nation's 250th anniversary in sight in 2026. Here she is.
We need to be putting in the work to do that deep digging and reflection and look back of what the city of Boston's formal role was, the many ways in which we were involved in the practice of enslavement, benefited from, and what the current impacts continue to be resulting from that.
There are NAACP chapters all over the country. Are you hearing from other parts of the country? Do they see Boston with our sort of unique place in American history as a leader in this?
I think there's an understanding that that we all have a responsibility to step up and lead when it comes to really helping our communities better understand the history of enslavement in this country and the lingering impacts of it today. That said, you know, to the mayor's point, I do believe that each city has, you know, something to offer to, in this country, has something to offer to this conversation. We did not every city across the country, not every community across the country had the same relationship with chattel slavery, right? And so when we think about Boston, for example, you know, one of the things that I'm looking forward to personally, just learning a little bit more about is, you know, our role as an enabling city. When we think about the institution of slavery, right? Slavery was sustained not only by those who directly owned owned slaves or directly by those who directly was not only sustained by those who were engaged in the practice of owning, so-called owning people, but it was also allowed to sustain and thrive, quite frankly, by those who enabled it. You know, there's financing that was involved in this practice.
Purchasing of goods and services that were made by industries that used enslaved labor, for example.
That used enslaved labor. And so I'm interested to better understand, because of course we've heard the stories about the role that our financial institutions played in the institution of slavery. I want to better understand that personally. And so I look forward, you know, as much as anybody else, as being a part of this learning process. And again, I want to underscore this. Yes, it is going to be hard. Yes, there are going to be aspects of this process that, you know, some of us might want to kind of turn a blind eye to. But I do believe it's important work for us to do. I do believe that there's value in it. Again, kind of learning this history and that we're going to be able to do it together.
Tanisha, I'm sorry, we have limited time and there are a couple other things I want to make sure to ask you. So bear with me because I'm going to move us to today for a minute. We talked a little bit about, you know, reparations is at the end. There's reconciliation and learning to do in the meantime. I want to put the embrace, the new monument unveiled on Friday, in this context. We talked with Reverends Willie Bodrick II and Mariama White Hammond about it yesterday on the show, and I'm sure you're aware there's a good deal of criticism about the choice of the symbols in this monument, the forearms of Dr. King and Coretta Scott King hugging. Every city's on a journey, and there's a distance from, say, busing to the summer of 2020 after George Floyd's murder here to the monument, to this panel. Where do you situate the embrace in our journey, and what is your thought about the criticism of Hank Willis Thomas's design?
So one of the things that I deeply appreciate about the embrace, the process bringing us to the to the monument, to the tribute, is that there was a very intentional public process that began several years ago. And folks from across the city of Boston have the opportunity, residents across the city of Boston have the opportunity to weigh in on how we here in Boston wanted to honor and lift up the Kings. And the embrace is the piece that was selected. I think it's important to note that, and acknowledge that this is, it's different than what we've seen other cities and other communities do to lift up the Kings. I think it's important for us here in Boston to be open to what people have to say and use it as an opportunity again to learn. In the early stages of this project, one of the things that we talked a lot about as a community was that our hope that this monument would open up conversation and dialogue. And indeed, it has. And so I'm hopeful that we will lean into it, that we will shirk the kind of the pull to be defensive about it, but really lean into it, be open to the conversation, and hope that it can inspire more creativity, that it can inspire more hope for people, not just here in Boston, but across the country.
Last question for you, Tanisha Sullivan. Just briefly, what's the most important concrete next step here?
Well, I think a few things. One, specifically on the topic of reparations here in the city of Boston, I think it's important for us to and for the mayor to get the composition of the task force right. These are the folks who will help to steer this process. They will not be the decision makers, but they'll be steering this process. So making sure that we've got the right folks sitting around that table who understand the importance of this work and who are committed to us doing it in a way that is healthy and helps to unite and not further divide. And specifically as it relates to the embrace, the next step has to be the work. Look, the Kings were not about monuments and statues. They were about the work of alleviating poverty, about creating a more inclusive community and society. And so I look forward to the work of Embrace Boston really beginning now in helping to carry forward the work of the Kings so that we can truly have the type of community live in the beloved community that King spoke of.
Tanisha Sullivan, president of the Boston chapter of the NAACP, thanks so much.
Thank you.